accession with 32394, Mr. Don Farrington, Real 11. Now, we're talking about your time in the Bankauer POW camp. There's a couple of picking up on other things. Did you have a camp shop or be paid any camp currency? Because a lot of camps did have a shop and a currency.
No.
Did you have to go on working part?
Our own currency, can I say?
Tell us, you can talk about cigarettes, yeah.
Our own currency was primarily cigarettes.
Tell me how it worked.
Well, when we had Red Cross parcels, we usually get, say, when the, before, how shall I put it, in the early stages, we managed to get one parcel per person per week. And that was good. And that, and we didn't get a great deal from the Germans, just the very basic soups and things like that. But now in the British, we had two different types of parcels. One was British and one was American, and I'm not sure about Canadian, but mainly British and American. Now the British had all different kinds of things in them. And the, likewise, the Americans did, but they had things in the Americans which our chaps seemed to like better, and that was cigarettes. But they also got several items of food that we probably enjoyed. But the best thing of it all was that if you got something, for instance, I didn't smoke, and what a blessing that was. So they set up a stall. And it was set up every day with all different items out of the food parcels of things that the individuals didn't want or was willing to sell. So they, in actual fact, labelled all the different items, and it would say underneath it the cost, so many cigarettes. So you can see how I was fine. But that was made it very interesting, because it meant that you not only got the best of your own goods in your own, the British parcel, you could also go and select something out of the other one, even though the price was high, if it was a good item, like Spam or something like that, which we could do a lot of things with Spam, as you can imagine. And it meant that I might have to pay a lot more cigarettes than you would normally, but that didn't bother me. So I was all right. I could get extra Spam, and I was. While we had the food parcels coming in regularly, it was quite livable with, as far as the rations were concerned. The fact that we weren't getting, if we'd had no parcels, as happened later on, we would have could have been in a pretty bad state.
A couple more questions about recreations, because you seem to have got probably from Red Cross some gramophones and records.
Oh
like.
Yes,
tell us about that.
They came in at the same time. That was another thing that was morale raising. Anything to do with England and coming in from America like this was wonderful. So they got films coming in, and they got they'd also got what was the other thing they had?
With gramophone records.
Oh, the records, that's right. And they got a whole series of records of like Bing Crosby and all the relevant stars. And Glenn Miller, of course, was so popular, he was on every day.
And you'd actually have those, they seem quite up-to-date records then.
Oh, yeah.
Were they played in the huts, or was there more than one of these gramophones?
I think they used to borrow them for so long, and then it would have to be passed round. Obviously, they couldn't have a big place where they had. What they did start was trying to get a stage erected.
Hang on, let me just do the cinema first. Did you actually have a cinema? Because you seem to have got some films as
well,
and Hardy,
yeah,
and Corsican.
Yeah. Well, they fixed up one of the huts. There must have been, all this must have been done way back, that where they'd have these sort of things, like have a stage for a thing in case you they were going to have any productions of any kind on the stage.
So what cinema shows would you get?
Well, they get some of the reasonable ones. It was a mixture between song and dance things and, you know, the normal cheerful ones. And you get, sometimes you get the odd thrillers. And it was a complete mixture, really.
And what about, did you have concert parties on the same stage, I presume? You know, in other words, the lads put on a show, that kind of thing.
Yes, we did, but I can't remember much about them, actually. But we did have them, not often, but...
Would you go?
Oh, yes, I went, yeah.
There's something called compound capers, you know, and things like that. There's variety shows, aren't there?
That's right, yes.
Were they any good?
Oh, yeah. In fact, it's surprising, because I'm sure a lot of these were ex-professionals that had done stage work before, because I mean it's like everything else, you can gag your way through so much, but you can't sort of make do and without some prior knowledge of how things should be put over on a stage. But they were quite good on the whole.
I forgot to ask, what were the latrines and facilities like, you know, showers?
Well, again, there was nothing wrong with those. They were fine, actually, you know.
Proper facilities.
Oh, yes, yeah. I mean, I just have to go retrace your steps a little bit on that one, talking about when we first got in, all a latrine was a big cesspit, which was covered. And there were long, big poles, huge things, right across the top of the cesspool. And you had to balance on there. That was your toilet. It was just a question, don't swing back to and fro, otherwise you'd be in.
So what were the new ones like when you got them?
Well, the new ones were the actual flush type. Yes, which was the normal ones that you used to.
Showers?
And showers were available as well, yeah. See,
it
was all new. As far as I know, I can't remember now.
That's okay.
They were sufficient there to keep everybody quite happy as far as the facilities were concerned.
Now, you know, we're still moving through. I mean, you saw the raids. Anything moving towards Christmas? Anything stick out in your mind? There's nothing particular in your diary. Just a lot of sport activities.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
Kind of thing. That's what seems to be happening. You know.
Yeah.
Anything before Christmas Day? You seem to remember Christmas Day quite well in your diary. I'm not sure whether you remember it now.
I think the main thing is that we knew when Christmas was approaching, and what we'd done would save so much out of each individual. By the way, what we hadn't described to you is how you go about sharing things and facilities.
No, you haven't. Let's do that first, then.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the cooking facilities, what you did, you had, say, 14 members in that particular hut. You divided them into, say, maybe three sections, that meant if you got about four in each particular, might have been more than that, you could have about perhaps, I would say altogether, about a combination of I'm just trying to think how many words there were in a combine.
I'm just looking in the things if it says.
I think I'm stuck on that. Sorry.
Well, I can't quite see it, but I mean.
Let's just say we're in one hut, and each of the individuals would have
Red Cross parcel.
So eventually when they'd sorted all the food out to last them for the week, which they did individually. Well, we did it individually, of course. We kept so much, and then we decided between us if they wanted to do a certain thing for lunch. They'd get together, and each person would put some contribution from his Red Cross into the person who was going to be the cook, actually. And that's how it worked out. We worked it out between us that if you wanted to do, you could do your own, or you could spare, link up with one or two other people and make something out of a total of whatever you've got in your parcels between you. So it depended on the individual, but usually you had, I would say, three or four people's in a combine.
Well, I've found it now, and you had three separate combines, one of eight
That's
and
it.
Two of four.
Very good, isn't it?
So the three combines, That's two fours
works.
And one eight.
So that's how it works, yeah.
And now, tell me about Christmas Day then. What do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Christmas?
Well, what I'm leading up to from there is the fact that because at that time we were getting good supplies of the parcels, we decided to go extra mad and really put on a good show for Christmas Day as far as the food was concerned. And of course, what we did, of course, we go over the top, don't we? And forget that. Our stomachs are not, how shall I put it, acclimatised to living in luxury. So we go ahead and each individual we make up the first part of it, which would be to do with, to do with the meat combination. Then you've got your the vegetable combination, and then if you wanted to, you've got the choice of having your soup or having a sweet, and making your own pies and cakes. Now, my forte was making cakes. Don't tell me how I did it, but I did it. But put all kinds of mixture into the thing and made it all nice and gooey. And then we had a special combine where we used to heat things. and taking my memory of all this was, I was always very fond of anything rich and very sweet. And I must confess that after I'd had the meat situation, I was then faced with this pudding that I'd made, and cake that I'd made, and it just prodded it, and it was felt a bit soggy on top, so I thought, well, leave it on for a bit longer. And when I tried it, it was fine, it was just right, but it was soft, it wasn't actually hard baked, it was soft baked. And I really went to town on that, and that was fine. Thoroughly enjoyed the Christmas dinner, and we had all the necessary singing carols, and we did everything Christmassy, decorated the hut up as far as we could, and we really made a good time of it. However, we were to suffer later that night. I always remember getting near towards lights out, and suddenly I felt the urge. I had to go to the toilet. When it came on so quickly, I only just got there in time, and terrible. I really suffered. And that was the outcome of eating too much, and it was too, how shall I put it, spicy and rich altogether. For my stomach couldn't possibly take, but I wasn't alone, because no sooner had I got to the toilet and then back again on top of my bung than the other people were going out in streams, and they were also affected. So altogether we saw the saw the Christmas day out all in agony, I must confess. But it was worthwhile in the when looking back on it, it taught us a lesson as well, to not to get so extravagant, and it was only because it was Christmas Day.
Now, following Christmas, there seems to be a lot more air activity going on.
Yeah, well, there were all building up.
Bombs in the area. There was raids in the area,
and
someone was shot by mistake by a trigger happy guard.
Well, the reason for this is that the Russians were getting that much nearer, and the Americans were doing it in daylight, but the Russians were coming at night, and the Americans were virtually. Over every day, not just every other day, every day the sky was full of these fortresses coming over, and you knew full well that the time was coming when we were going to be released, but it was a question of who got there first, and we were all hoping it would be the Americans and British, but it wasn't to be, because the Russians were getting that much nearer. And then suddenly we had a visit from some Russian officials in a jeep. I think it was Russian officials in a jeep. They were saying that they were going to come round and cut the wires down, etc.
Hang on, didn't you go on a march first?
No. That march?
We've just checked it out, and the Russians didn't come in January.
No.
You go on. Now, so set the scene there, because this is before you go on this long march, which is actually not your diary, it's somebody else's diary that you rewrote up, according to this. But it's what happened to you as well. Now, you start leaving the camp on the 19th of January. Now, what was the situation in January, as far as you remember it, before you set off on this march, and there's a train ride as well?
I just have to have a quick look at it, I'm sure. We got to the point, in actual fact, where the bombing activity was followed by the Russians had encircled the camp, and word had got through they were going to release the releases, which unfortunately didn't happen.
That's because they hadn't surrounded the camp.
That's right, yeah.
That was a rumour.
Yeah, it was just the officials that came into the camp, the Russian officials that came into the camp, saw the British officer that was left in charge. He was...
So there's no again we've gone around in a circle, but there's no visit from a Soviet thing. That's much later. You're about to go on this long march, so tell us what happened. You do 250 kilometres in 12 days.
Oh, it's all mixed up now. The time arose that we're evacuated. That's right. I'm getting confused with one camp to another. Okay. That's where I'm going. Yeah.
This is where you're leaving Bankow.
Yeah, that's right. Now, how shall I start it then?
Well, leaving the camp, yeah.
Well, the time had come, apparently, because of all the activity in the immediate future, that the camp is going to be evacuated. The Germans obviously didn't want to be... taken prisoners by the Russians, and they were frightened to death of the Russians, so they decided that the camp would evacuate on the such and such a date in January, they apparently said that they were going to go to another stalag somewhere.
That's Stalag 3A.
That's right, Stalag 3A. It's just a question of getting so far away from the Russians and as quickly as possible. So everything was done in a hurry. you were given a few hours' notice, and it was in the early hours of the morning.
Now that's 19th of January.
That's right, about the 19th of January, and we were then asked to parade outside, and it was a bitterly cool day, cool night, and well below freezing, and we were kept waiting for quite some time before they let us go out of the camp. So we got with us every bit of scrap of food we could carry, and we had as much clothing on as possible under the circumstances, and we had no idea where we were going to, and nobody knew, on even the British people in charge didn't know. They were just following instructions, and that was it. And so this commenced a horrible nightmare of a journey, which covered a tremendous amount of mileage, and it meant that every so often we'd march us for so long, and then we'd have to be stopped somewhere, and perhaps housed in some barns of a farm or whatever it was, and sort of stay there for the night, and then start off again the following morning.
Looks like there's a couple of factories as well.
And that's, there were different establishments used by the Germans for making us somewhere to stay overnight, and then set off again the next day. And during this time, very near to us, we could see literally hundreds of the German people also evacuating.
What state were the German refugees in?
And they were in a shocking state. They had wagons of all different sorts and sizes, full of all the whatever belongings they could take with them. But they were also, you can see, they were frightened to death, because the one thing they didn't want to see was a Russian, because they were so knew what the Russians were like from the stories they got from their own soldiers. And so they decided that they wouldn't wait until they arrived. And they also packed the roads with the refugees then, in addition to our own people. And unfortunately, like I say, the journey was horrendous, because most of it was walking or marching or whatever you like to call it. But during that time, the temperatures dropped well below freezing, and it was, the conditions were dreadful for you to even be out in, never mind marching in it. And you can imagine, we got very little food. We still was carrying a small amount of food, but and all we got every now and again was just a cupful of soup or something or a liquid refreshment, and that was all we got from the Germans. And so, and the other thing, of course, is looking after yourself, like latrines, and those are out of the question. You just did what you wanted to do, where it was, and that was it. And trying to keep yourself clean was impossible. You were never even seen a wash basin, or never seen a tap. It was so basic, everything, that. And not only that, but the second thing that was coming, because people were taking things from the side of the road, like beet. There was a lot of sugar beet, frozen or solid on the, or frozen to a certain extent on the side of some of the roads, and you tried to chop something off and take that, and people were eating those. And what happened next was, of course, we had a lot of diarrhea and all kinds of things appertaining to your stomach. Your feet were getting frostbite. There was hardly a part of your body that wasn't affected at some stage or other.
Did you get diarrhoea or dysentery?
I didn't. I didn't get diarrhoea because one thing, I didn't take anything like that from the road. I just stuck with what I'd got. And I think a lot of the diarrhoea was self-inflicted to a certain extent, except bearing in mind the horrific temperatures we were in, well below freezing during this time. And there was no, say if you got your, you were covered in snow when it started snowing in different parts of it. And I think the whole thing together, like the extreme cold, the snow when it was in, then it when it melted, everywhere was, once the frost and the ice had disappeared, you were up to your ankles in water, sort of walking through it all the time, couldn't evade it. So your feet were suffering. There wasn't a part of your body that wasn't really suffering. And I think, as I say, if on that particular march, I think it was the worst experience I'd ever had.
You seem to have been doing about, it's in kilometres, about 15 to 20 kilometres a day, which is what, 10 to 15 miles.
That's right, yeah.
It's up to 10 miles, and yeah, it's a long way, wouldn't that?
Yeah, it is, and people kept dropping out.
What happened to the people who dropped out?
No. I think some of them were unfortunate and got captured again, and others managed to link up with the troops somewhere else. But you were taking an awful risk if you did that sort of thing, because you never knew, you might end up with the Russians and that wouldn't do you any good.
Now you then seemed to get a train.
A train towards the end of it, yes.
Just right to the, because you're going for quite a long way, really. So you're marching until what, about the third, then you have a rest for a day or so.
Yeah.
Anything else you remember about what was the train journey, about the march part?
Well,
you've done very well.
The march, in actual fact, was. I just can't say it was just, it was hellish, there's no question about it. It was, you just couldn't escape. I don't mean escape literally, but I couldn't get away from contracting different things and having to suffer with your feet. A lot of people had very bad feet after this. I was very fortunate. There was nothing you could do, you just had to carry on. It dried itself virtually.
How were you in your head? I mean, what were you upset? I'm not upset, but starting to get depressed, or
it's just wondering how long it's going to go on for all the time. You think, well, how much more can we take? I mean, physically as well as mentally, it was difficult all round. And as I say, it was the most horrendous part of my war than I can even think of. Because once you were in the Pyrenees war camp before, that was all right, that was reasonable. But this, being moved from one place to another, was complete murder as far as the individual, because you'd neither got any confidence. You knew full well that at least you were getting towards being released, but it was just how long could you take it? And by the time we got to the our destination, which again wasn't prepared for us,